Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you, Big Daddy Abel. Welcome, everybody, to another Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday. We're simulcasting right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're on Facebook or Twitter right now, please join in the conversation. As always, we'd like to start off with a prayer when we do the Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday party. If you don't mind, in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Father God, you are the great physician, and I ask for healing, whether mind, body, spirit, or in all of these. I believe you will give what is best. Thank you for your goodness, kindness, and love in all things. That comes from our daily bread. The other line they have is, when you think of all that's good, give thanks to God. Now, I want to welcome everybody to another Thirsty Thursday party. Got a lot going on tonight. Just an overview of tonight. We just did the opening prayer. Okay. If you have some tabs open on your computer here, if you're following along, if you're on the blog, there's a lot of interesting blogs, one or two of which I'm going to read this evening. See, the first one's going to be what's coming up next for the Web Surfer series. I'll read that in a little bit. There's going to be a few new releases tonight, one by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer for her audiobook of Sweetwater River. An interesting blog post by Carolyn Orvitz. We're going to preview New Murray Pure from Silver City, which is pretty cool. There's a new author in the Helping Hands Press community, Larry Peterson. I'll read a little bit about him. Larry's going to be on a show with me in June, I believe June 23rd. Pam Horner has a new release this evening, Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors, Volume 4. Mark Venturini, we're going to preview his Volume 2 in his Whispers from Forbidden Earth Blood Tithe. We're going to talk about a brand new sale going on for the Helping Hands Press community and their store. It's called the Spring Super Sale. It's 25% off anything in the store. All you got to do is use the code word at checkout for the coupon Spring Super Sale. No spaces in between. Tracy Krause has a new release for Colony Zero Series Zero. She will be the first author to have a story released in that. Robert Kennard, a reading sample from his saga of the Black Dragon Key. And also we'll be playing an audiobook sample of Tony Hilling's A Voice of Ada Stamen. Other stuff, we're going to be talking about George Taylor, his latest podcast, which is really cool. We'll be playing that at the end of the show. And also, we will be playing it tomorrow. With that, if anybody's on the blog right now, if you're on Facebook, if you're on the homepage, please tell me if you're having any trouble seeing the sidebars. I'm not really sure if it's just me or what the deal is on that. Murray Pure is in the house. I see him. I see Marcella Laycock, Tony Hilling, Joy Ross Davis, Linda Mizucci, Peggy Bland Pfeiffer. I saw Patty J. Smith on a sidebar, and Baxter Campbell, June Foster. Now let's get right to the first. I'm just going to go down here. If you're scrolling down, the first blog post is what's next for the Web Surfer series. Cindy Kep may know a little something about that. Okay, now next up for the Web Surfer series is Volume 7, Fall of the Invincible Man. It's an egotistical gamer named Harvey and his friends risk playing a simulated reality game that has taken users' lives. I'm not sure if I said his name correctly. It's H-A-R-V-E. So I'm going with Harvey. If that's incorrect, someone is more than welcome to correct me on the social media. I'm fine with that. What I want to do real quick is one of the blog posts that is not included in this evening is Melanie Jasky's, Melanie M. Jasky. She is the author of Intentions, Inklings, and she has a blog post here. And the name of it is Stepping into the Stream of History. Okay. This is Melanie M. Jasky. And she's been on the show a number of times. Very engaging. Her knowledge of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and Inklings. Very extensive. Okay, here we go. I will not inject again. I set my novel Evasions, a prequel to the Oxford Chronicles series, in England and Scotland during the early years of World War II and the Battle of Britain. Britain, okay. After creating my fictional characters and having their basic storyline in mind, I discovered in my travels and research that many times fact intersected with fiction. Some may call such intersections coincidences, but I believe they are providences. Whenever I stumble upon these providences, a dear friend and fellow traveler would say that I had stepped into the stream of history. For example, I thought that my American nurse, Ann Little, would possibly work at the Churchill Hospital in Headington because of its proximity to C.S. Lewis's home, the Kilns. But I wasn't sure when it had even been built. On a trip to Oxford, I met a friend for lunch at the hospital, where she worked as a pharmacist. In the course of our conversation, she told me that I had actually been that it had actually been built by the Americans in World War II to care for wounded soldiers, something she happened to know because of a historical photograph displayed in the hospital's former lobby. Part of my story revolves around the refugees who lived at the Kilns during the war years, in particular my character Annie, pregnant with her son David, who is a hero of my previously written novels, Inklings, Intentions, and Expectations. Research, I came across a letter C.S. Lewis had written to a little girl, in which he stated that they had a number of evacuees staying at the Kilns, and one was a six-week-old baby boy. In another instance, I learned that the Reverend Peter Bide, who had married Jack and Joy Lewis, the role I had given to my fictional Eric McKenzie, had served in World War II, and after the war decided to become an Anglican clergyman. He had a wife and children, and Lewis helped him finance his return to the studies at Oxford and then the seminary, just as I had envisioned for Eric. After I decided that my Scottish Eric McKenzie would begin the story as a caddy at St. Andrews, I was given a book about the caddies of the Royal and Ancient Golf Course called A Wee Nip at the 19th Hole. The author, Richard McKenzie, was the caddy manager at St. Andrews, and when I visited the golf course, stopping by the caddy shack, he happened to be there. Not only was Richard very kind and willing to help with some wonderful stories about the McKenzies, which I wove into my novel, but he also is a devoted Christian. These provincial leadings made my story more grounded in reality and also served as markers along the way of God's guidance and encouragement. Plus, stepping into the stream of history can be amazing fun. Okay, after that, there is a biography about Melanie. You can stop by her Amazon author page. The link is below that. And you can find her Twitter feed on there. Follow her on Twitter if you want. And also see her other titles. As we're going on, at 8:10, which is in about a minute, not that I want to tell everybody at the time, I'm sorry, I want to play the audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's new audiobook release this evening, Sweetwater River. Now, this is narration by George, voice actor George Taylor. And on the other side of this, we're going to read Carolyn Orovitz's blog post about grammar, and we're also going to talk about Murray Pierce's new Silver City story. Take it away, George.
Helping Hands Press, narration by George and author Peggy Bland Pfeiffer, take you back to Sweetland in the novel Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples. Rosine and Mike Carson have legally adopted four foster care teenage daughters, giving them a forever family they had never known before. But after only a year with the Carsons, one by one, Veronica, Shira, Melanie and Misty reach adulthood, venturing out to start new lives of their own, leaving the house along the banks of the Sweetwater River in Sweetland. Rosine is proud of the adults they are becoming, but also heartbroken as she and Mike face an empty nest. She soon will see just how deep the girls' roots are to their riverside home. In the Sweetwater River series, these six lives continue to connect in some unexpected ways. In Volume 1, Ripples, Rosine sheds past burdens, while the same types of burdens threaten Mike. Shira's study of music takes an unexpected turn, and we meet Trent, New Becton's veterinarian, whose interests include Veronica. Listen to this sample from Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples, by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer. Your narrator is George Taylor. On a balmy Friday evening in late April, Rosine Gentry Carson stood at her bedroom window facing the Sweet River mountain range, a view that had greeted her every evening for over 50 years. Tonight, the setting sun cast a glow of peachy golden rays through the limbs of freshly budded hardwood trees and highlighted the new green growth on the evergreens. The Sweetwater River, dividing her property 50 yards away, reflected the glorious colors from the sunset as it rolled by, calmer now that winter had bid Sweetland its welcome farewell. Her purposeful glance at the small stone cairn along the river's edge shot her heart with the familiar pang of loss. The cairn marked the spot where, 33 years ago, her 3-year-old son toppled into the river and was swept away by the rushing, frigid waters from the mountain's snow runoff. She waited for the expected tears, but none came. Time had dulled the pain, but the sorrow of her loss would never go away. Now she inhaled the delicate fragrance of Lily of the Valley that wafted up from below the open window. When she had planted those tiny bulbs years ago, Ross had told her they'd never survive on the west side of the house. But they had, and spread, much to her delight. "How's my lovely Cherokee bride?" Mike Carson, Rosine's husband of almost 5 months and pastor of Sweetland Assembly of God Church, came up behind her and wrapped his arms around her waist. "Hi, Mike." She closed her eyes with a smile and leaned back into his embrace. "Just thinking about Robbie," she said. "That pile of stones on the riverbank used to be a place I avoided at all costs. I even refused to look at it. I resented Ross when he did that. I didn't want any reminders of my loss. Today, after all the years of bitterness, I find it oddly comforting. It connects me to that precious little boy and the man who fathered him." Mike's arms tightened around her. "I'm glad, Rosie. It sounds like you might be moving toward that closure everyone talks about." "Not quite, but I'm getting close." She turned in his arms to face him. "There's one more thing I need to do before I find complete peace."
"And what's that?"
"Visit Robbie out at Rosebriar Cemetery. I haven't been back there since the day we buried him. It's time, and I'd like you and the girls to go with me."
She hesitated, her heart pounding. Was she really ready for this?
She'd felt certain about it a moment ago, but yes, it was long past time. Time to forgive herself. And Ross, time to visit the little boy who never had a chance to grow up. Like the little stone cairn beside the river, she had avoided confronting the past and the guilt she'd carried for too many years. But Mike's quizzical frown, while not exactly accusing, made her realize she had some explaining to do. "You might as well go ahead and ask that question I see on your face. You want to know how I avoided seeing Robbie's grave when I buried Ross. Am I right?"
He nodded with a gentle smile. "It had occurred to me, yes.
I was a coward, Mike. Afraid to face my own guilt in Robbie's death. At Ross's gravesite, while Pastor Paul officiated, I kept my gaze averted, denying myself even one look at the grave next to Ross. After so many years of refusing to visit the cemetery, I felt unworthy to acknowledge it then.
and that only piled more guilt on my shoulders. Does that make sense? Yes, it does, honey. I sensed you were carrying some heavy burdens, but I knew when you were ready you would tell me. I'm grateful you've chosen to share them with me now. Of course, the girls and I would be honored to make the visit with you. When would you like to go? Tomorrow, she said with a firm nod, looking straight into Mike's eyes. Right after breakfast, before the girls head off into their weekend activities. Good. He cupped her face with his hands and kissed her. I'm so proud of you, Rosie, and I love you with all my heart. Sweetwater River, Volume 1, Ripples, by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer, is available through Helping Hands Press at myhelpinghandspress.com. Narration is by George Taylor. Production by narrationbygeorge.com.
Thank you, George. Welcome back. This is the G-Zone. We're simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday. I want to thank everybody that's on Facebook and Twitter. Just a quick recap of what we're doing. A little bit earlier, I read the What's Next for the Web Surfers. We also just played the audio book for the audio sample for Peggy Bland Pfeiffer, Sweetwater River. We're going to get to Carolyn Orvitz's blog post in a minute. I did read Melanie Jasky's blog post. Tomorrow morning at 8:30 here on the G-Zone, I'm going to play George Taylor's most recent podcast. And what that's going to be about is, let's see what George has here. This week's podcast comes courtesy of a blog posted by a young man studying at the Princeton Theological Seminary. He asked the question, which titles our podcast, how would Jesus date? Intriguing to me. Even better are the thoughts he shares with us. Thank you, John Paul Cook, for sharing these thoughts and allowing me to use them in this podcast. Now, the link for the podcast is right there in the blog post. Also, George's bio, and the link for his website is all right there. And Melanie M. Jasky's blog post is called Stepping Into the Stream. You'll be able to see that on Facebook tomorrow as well as on Twitter. Let's get to Carol Orvitz's blog post. Good or Bad in Children's Literature. Me and my bestest friend run to the park. Good grammar, bad grammar, doesn't matter. In our reading and English classes, we are working on the correct use of pronouns. The children were to determine the correct use of subjective and objective pronouns, when to use I or me, he, she, or him, she, or her. While we were working on this skill in sentence writing and speaking, along came a library book chosen by some students. On page 2 of this book, we read, me and my friend went to get the stuff. There goes our lesson on the correct use of pronouns down the drain. We also worked on the correct use of verb tense, present and past, for regular verbs such as walk and walked, and irregular verbs such as run and ran. Then we read in another book, I runned in the room. We also read, it costed a lot of money. While working on adjective skills such as good, better, best, and fun, more fun, most fun, we then read in another library book, me and Tommy have a bestest friend, and this game is funner than that one. The argument authors of these books sometimes use is that they write the way children speak. However, children do not always speak this way, and when they do, teachers often correct their improper grammar. Another argument authors use is children know it is not correct grammar and they write it for emphasis. However, children do not always recognize what they read as bad grammar and may then imitate it. Authors may use colloquial language or expressions for emphasis to show different characters are talking, but with young children who are learning the ins and outs of correct English grammar, just plain poor grammar does not help them develop good writing or speaking skills. There are plenty of good books out there, so there is no need to resort to books or stories that undo the lessons the children are learning in their English classes. And so, my best friend and I ran to the park. Author's note, I grew up in a home where books were valued. Trips to the library and books given as Christmas gifts were considered a real treat. I always loved reading, and as a teacher, my goal was to instill a love in reading in my students. My literature guides were designed to motivate children to develop a love for reading while developing the necessary reading comprehension and vocabulary skills to succeed. With emphasis on good quality literature, we carefully selected books of great interest to students, helping motivate the most reluctant reader as well as those children who enjoy and excel at reading. Carolyn's a bit more about Carolyn's there. You can check out her blog and her Amazon author page. I thought that was pretty cool. Let's see what else we have on the blog right now. Ah, Murray Pures. It's 8:20. This should be popping up on the Facebook page, let me see. So I'm not on the Facebook page, but now I'm on the Facebook page. Yes, there it is. Great and Sincere is about to ride again in Murray Pure's Silver City Volume 2. Honey, this ain't my first rodeo. Okay. There's a little bit here. If you go to the blog post, let me just get ready here. Great and Sincere's eyes went to steel. Most of the time, I'm just dealing with broken and misguided and wrong-headed people with a chunk of bad boy in them, he said. But now and then, I have to face real evil. When that happens, there is only one thing to do. I want to save innocent lives. Six men glared at him. Step aside, their black leather and black bearded leader growled, towering over Graydon. We're not here for you today. Walk away, Marshal. Walk away and let us at him. Graydon put his right hand on his holster. Women and children, a crippled man, you think I'm going to walk away and let you slaughter them? That's not how it goes down in New Mexico. They crossed us. I know about crosses. It's because of a cross that I'm not going anywhere. Are you crazy? There are six of us. When it comes to evil, there's just one. We'll cut you to pieces. The six men moved like lightning and whipped out their MP5 machine pistols. Great and Sincere was just a shade faster than lightning. Not much, just enough. I strongly suggest you check out Murray Pure's Silver City. Volume 1 was released a little while ago. It's a great read. Dynamic, action-packed. As always, wonderful stuff from Murray. Let me see what's going on here on the Facebook page. Here's on the sidebar a little bit from Sue. Sue Bedeau. Everyone, George Taylor rocks. I had the great privilege of meeting him in person a week ago along with his wonderful wife, and we had a great time and enjoyed instant fellowship and lots of fun talking about books and many other common interests. Let's see. Tony Hilling is on there trying to talk about hockey. Sorry, Tony. Hockey is not what we're yapping about today. Although the Flyers have hired a new coach, which I think is pretty cool. Cindy was nice enough to make a correction for me on a sidebar. It is Harv, not Harvey. And for that, I apologize. All right. William Tash is in the house. And he had a comment on the audiobook for Peggy Blanton Pfeiffer, Sweetwater River. Awesome. Gotta love George the narrator. George will be narrating William Tash's soon-to-be-released first story in the Backslide series. You can look for that probably in about 2 weeks, which is going to be pretty cool. We're going to release, Helping Hands Press will be releasing the ebook as well as the audiobook simultaneously. I think that's going to be pretty wild. So look for that. It may be part of Thirsty Thursday next week for the 28th. Let's see. We have a lot going on next week. A number of awesome blog posts next week. Also, Andrew J. Graham just shared with us a very interesting thing. That'll be part of Thirsty Thursday next week. I think everybody will be very interested in it. Now, Roberta Brocious has a comment on Carolyn Orovitz's blog post. She says, this is an interesting discussion to have. I often told high school students, weren't writing complete sentences unless you want to land on a New York Times bestsellers list. I always add, for academic writing, stick to the rules. I guess younger kids must learn what the rules are before they can take liberties. Perhaps a writer could make a character's baby sibling use wrong verb forms. Another bad grammar as a contrast. What do you think? Interesting. We'll see if anybody else comments on that as the evening goes on. Let's see what else is flying around here, time-wise. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go back to the blog. Now, if you're on the Facebook page, You can see on the left sidebar below the header there, you can see the two links. One is for the Helping Hands Press website. The other one is for the blog. And both of them, we'll be talking about both of them here this evening. The next post coming up is Please Meet YA Fantasy and Children's Author Larry Peterson. So here's a brief bio about Larry. Larry is going to be starting a new series with Helping Hands Press. And is the title here? Well, there'll be a cover comparison next week for Larry. Here we go. Larry Peterson Sr. is an author and Catholic Christian blogger and has written over 500 blogs. He was born and raised in the Bronx and moved to New Jersey when he got married. Eventually, he and his family settled in Tampa Bay area of Florida. He started writing newspaper commentary in the late 1980s. His books include the novel The Priest and the Peaches and the children's book Slippery Willy, Stupid Ugly Shoes. He's in the final draft of his latest book, The Demons of Abaddon, which is a sequel to The Priest and the Peaches. Larry's first wife died of cancer, melanoma, in 2003. He married again in 2006. His new wife also had been widowed. Ironically, she came down with cancer, lymphoma, in 2011. In the fall of 2014, she was diagnosed as having early-onset Alzheimer's disease. Larry said, "We're both doing fine. Having faith is a beautiful thing." You can connect with Larry on social media on his web blog site, his Amazon author page, Goodreads, Twitter, Facebook. I just followed Larry today on Twitter. Be interesting to see what he has going. Where does that take us to? Okay, at 8:30, we're going to have the release of Pam Horner's Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors. So what I want to do right now, if I can get to it without being too goofy here, is I want to play the audio sample of Tony Hillings' The Voice of Ada Stamen. Now, on the other side of this, we'll talk about Pam Horner's Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors, Volume 4. Mark Venturini's Volume 2 of Whispers from Forbidden Earth, Blood Tithe, Volume 2, what's going on with the sale from Helping Hands Press, and a few other things. But let's play the audio sample of The Voice of Ada Stamen, Tony Hillings' fantasy series, as narrated by Narrations by George. Take it away, George.
Helping Hands Press, narration by George and author Tony Hilling, present The Voice of Ada Stamen, Volume 1, The Child's Arrival. If you could ask God one question, what would it be? About evil or suffering? Tony Hilling brings us an epic biblical fantasy called The Voice of Ada Stamen. Meet the chosen people who endure much evil and suffering. But there's more. Their God has a mind to save them. Seven arcs later, while much of the city of Deverinspay continued to revel in the 10-arc celebration at the palace for the birth of the king's son, two women were seen drawing near the temple of Verin in the quiet of the late evening. The sole guard at the temple was earning some extra silver, discharging his duty as the late guard of a virtually deserted temple, and almost dying of boredom in the process. He was suddenly jolted from his vacant reverie by the approach of the two women. One was tall, a stately bearing, the royal purple veil partially revealing strands of her flaxen hair. The other was a dark and plainly dressed Ma'apon woman, clearly the first woman's servant. The guard snapped to attention, bringing his 5-4-arm halberd to his chest to permit entry to the temple. He risked a quick glance and recognized the king's young niece. Both women entered the temple, the lady Kara ignoring him, her servant looking away from him anxiously. Once inside and beyond the reach of the guard's eyes and ears, the servant held out a restraining hand to her mistress. "My lady, I am so sick with fear. To enter this place is worse than passing through the gates of death, and someone is certain to notice us." Kara turned to her. "Do not worry, Mevedine,"
she whispered. I have planned it this way because of the feasting. There are a few people about, but Alameda will be here because it is not yet widely known that she is the mother of the royal child. But what about the guard? I will deal with him. But listen to me. This will be difficult for you. You must steel yourself. Alameda will not be easily persuaded to release your son. You may see blood tonight. Focus on your son, and remember that whatever happens, it is necessary to get him back. Medvedin nodded, fearful. They proceeded to the inner temple and climbed the stairs that led behind the high altar of Varun, the god of the Davarang people. As she mounted the stairs beside her mistress, Medvedin looked to her right and saw with horror the pyramid of 10 rising steps leading to the platform behind the huge bowl-shaped altar of sacrifice that had consumed so many of her people's infants. And behind the altar and overarching was the massive idol of Varun, a dragon's face, bearing a fierce demoniacal grin. She also noticed, about 4 forearms above the altar, a large metal funnel connected to a wide flue that led ever upwards, directing the sacrificial vapors into the heavens. Despite this, the stench of the heat and stale, burnt human flesh was nauseating. When they approached the anteroom behind the high altar, she saw her mistress pull something out of her tunic and cover it with her outer robe on her right hand. With her left hand, she knocked on the door, then reached out and took a piece of parchment from Medvedin. A Ma'apon woman answered, looking respectfully but slyly at Kara, and seemed to look right through Medvedin. I wish a private conference with Lady Alameda. I will see if she can attend on you, my lady, said Jadine. Lady Alameda will see you now. Kara swallowed, raising her left hand to Medvedin, signaling her to stay, and went inside the anteroom. In spite of her youthful courage, Kara quaked slightly as she looked at Alameda, the legendary high priestess of the Temple of Varun. Kara knew that the royal family even feared this former temple prostitute, now sorceress and black witch. She was the sole ruler of the temple and had subtle but strong influence in the royal courts. Kara had also heard the rumor that she was consorting with the king himself. Why, my lady, it has been some time since I have seen you come to Varun's chambers, said Alameda, a cold, mirthless smile playing at her lips. I no longer worship your god, Lady Alameda, said Kara simply. Have we gone over to the god of the defeated, of the chosen ones, or is it the conquered ones? She chuckled nastily, then turned her full glare on the young woman who stood before her. How can we help you? Kara met those dead gray eyes with a blank stare of her own. I would speak with you alone, she said. The high priestess paused an instant and then made a side movement of her head to Jadine. My lady? Go, said Alameda emphatically. Her attendant left and returned to her room. Now, my lady, said Alameda, the smile gone. Kara began. You have seized a boy child for sacrifice tomorrow. He has the name Banawan tattooed on his heel. Yes, said the high priestess. Kara knew she was expecting more. I will buy him back. What is your price? But, my lady, the king's edict was quite specific. All male children born to the Ma'apon slaves in the last 10 arcs are to be sacrificed to our god in celebration for the birth of the king's son. I cannot accede to your request without further order. The Voice of Ada Stamen by Tony Hilling. Reviewers say, we have murder, conspiracy, bribery, deceit, abuse of power. We have one race dominating the other and treating them as slaves. All this packed into a 33-page short introductory volume, and it really does set the atmosphere very well. Hilling has one great imagination. He also writes well. It's available from Helping Hands Press and narration by George. Your narrator is George Taylor for Tony Hilling's The Voice of Ada Stamen.
Thank you, George. You're listening to the G-Zone. We are simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, thanks for joining us. While we were gone listening to the audio sample, Pamela Horner's Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors, Volume 4, So It Goes, was released. What does Pam have going here? Let's see what it says here. Find out the real, but until now, untold story of some of the fantasy's best-known fairy tale characters. You will also meet some new characters along the way who wanted to join the fun. Read So It Goes, the hilarious conclusion, and the Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors series. Now, this is for sale right now in the Helping Hands Press store for 99 cents. If you use the code for the new sale, the spring summer sale, spring super sale, use that. If you use that code all in one word, spring super sale, you'll get 25% off of Pam Horner's Other Room Volume 4, So It Goes. You'll basically get this book for 75 cents. If you're doing that, all the audiobooks, everything at a Helping Hands Press store right now is 25% off simply by using the spring super sale, all one word in the coupon area, at checkout. Very simple, very easy. The ebooks, all the ebooks from the Helping Hands Press authors will be added as the days and weeks go on. The sale will go on until June 18th. So check back each week for the new ebooks that are in here. Also, what is not part of this evening, but just a heads up for everybody, Murray Pure's The Rose of Saratoga County, the complete ebook, the complete series ebook is now in the store. Not to mention, I'm just going to jump a little ahead, the other new release this evening is Tracy Krause's Colony Zero, Series Zero, Legacy Renita Story. Now, she was on the G-Zone with me on Tuesday evening. We touched on a number of subjects because, as you know, Tracy writes in a variety of genres. They were talking about her playwright. We were even taking a small amount of Canadian football. But this is the final series of the Colony Zero storyline. And Tracy's the first one to start it off. I believe next week or the week after will be June's author will be Mark Carver. Let me read what's going on here in Legacy Renita's story. As Colony Zero's chief spiritual leader, Renita always seemed to inject just the right amount of wisdom and calm into any situation. It wasn't always so. From a very young age, she had to deal with pain, loss, and turmoil, not to mention a passion that was almost her undoing. Read about the trials by fire that shaped Renita into the wise woman she became, able to shoulder the burdens of an entire colony of misfits and the misunderstood. Part of the Colony Zero Series Zero set of character backstories, Legacy of Renita's story brings deeper understanding of what makes this dynamic woman tick. Pretty awesome series. Tracy Krause is an incredible author, police reporter, and check out her story. Let's see what's going on here on the Facebook page. Mark Venturini's the little coming soon just popped up for his Whispers from Forbidden Earth Blood Tithe, Volume 2, Nightmares in the Dark. Let me read that real quick. Here's what the synopsis is. A boy and an elf have been chosen, one for the blood tithe, the other for the binding ceremony. Two children chosen on two worlds. For Jason Snyder, the tithe means nothing short of forfeiting his life for the fairies of the Winter Council. For the elf Strom, the binding means joining his mind and soul to a mad, tormented Maj. So Jason and Strom are running for their lives, one on Earth, the other on Eversong. The chosen have become the hunted. Now even more than their lives are at stake, Jason and Strom must both decide to confront their pursuers in order to save their fathers. There's a small bio for Mark Venturini. You can also find Mark on his blog and also on his Facebook page. And please feel free to stop by his Amazon author page and check out all of his titles. His first YA fantasy novel, for Whispers from Forbidden Earth, is a very nice novel. Speaking of the blog here, Patty J. Smith has a comment on Carolyn Orvitz's blog post. Absolutely wonderful post. It's so important to set the example for young children. Okay, let's see what kind of stats we have for today. As far as page views all-time history, right now the blog is up to over 557,000 views. Hopefully by this time next week it'll surpass 600,000. As far as the audience goes, there have been a few changes. Number one by far, United States. Number two is Russia by a wide volume, definitely. Number three is Germany. Four is France. Solid number five is Canada. Number six, Slovakia. Seven, United Kingdom. Eight is Venezuela. Number nine is Denmark. And rounding out the top 10 is the Netherlands. So they are the top 10 countries that are viewing the Helping Hands Press blog. Okay, as far as time goes, right now the post for the supercell has popped up there. If anybody likes the graphic, please give me some feedback on that. Well, let's see. Folks on the sidebar. Janice L. Dick, Andy J. Graham, Tony Hilling, giving his thanks to George Taylor. Let's see. We have some comments here for Mark Venturini's volume 2. Mark says he's excited about the second volume. Ann Baxter Campbell says, sounds like one I wouldn't want to read before I went to sleep. Pamela Horner, sounds cool. Mark says, thanks everyone for the kind words. Murray Pure wishes all his best. Cindy says, nifty cover. Tracy Krause is in the house. She says, sounds great. So does Joseph Max Lewis. He says, congrats, Mark. Cindy Marcia round out the comments. Let's see what else is going on here. Terrell Condon is very excited about Pam Horner's new release. Larry Peterson has got a lot of well wishes on his blog post, and he says he's very happy to be here. And if you're listening, Larry, welcome to the Helping Hands Press author community. Yeah, Murray's got some interesting comments as usual. Let's see what else we need to get involved with. Oh, definitely here. Okay. I need to get to this before we get too far into the broadcast, finishing out here. Robert Kennard, he is the author of Saga of the Black Dragon Key. And what's on the, if you're on the blog, there is a good part of chapter one for you to read. Now, as with anything here, the authors love comments. So if you can either leave a comment at the bottom of the blog post or use the contact form on the left sidebar of the blog, please feel free to leave something for Robert Kennard about the fantasy story here or any of the posts that appear on the Helping Hands Press blog. So let's read a little bit of this. A purple mist from a distant indigo sea enveloped Norgard, the realm of the dragons. The mist dissipated from the heat of an amber sun, revealing Norgard's rugged beauty. A pair of dragons glided silently between the stark gray mountains. Their elliptical eyes and sharp ears scanned the fingers of the lush vegetation below for movement, while their nostrils searched for the scent of prey. This hunt had taken a sense of urgency, for they had young to feed. The sounds of peeping within a large nest atop a precipice broke the silence of the new morning. Within the confines of the nest, six hatchlings spread their wings to capture the morning sun on their skin. While the five females were different shades of green, the male was black, as were all male dragons. His name was Ki, a name given to him by his father. With his parents, he inherited instincts and abilities beyond our mortal creatures. Ki was unaware that a pair of sinister eyes had watched his parents leave the nest. A twig snapped, revealing an alien presence. The nest shook as the hand of the intruder entered the hatchling sanctuary. Ki watched as one of his sisters disappeared from the nest, then another, until all had been taken. Ki was helpless. A finger touched his wing. The hand of the intruder closed on his body. In desperation, he clawed the palm of his tiny talons. The hand loosened its grip and retracted. "I am the sorcerer Ragnar, your master. Do not resist me, or I will destroy all of you," snarled the voice of the intruder. Ki understood the meaning of the words of the sorcerer. For a moment, he saw a dark form with predatory eyes and long pointed ears. He was forced into a large wicker basket. The hatchlings were carried into a cave. Suddenly, the wicker basket became filled with many colored lights, and they were transported through stone and space to the evil sorcerer's lair. This, the time of Ki and his sister's servitude for Ragnar, had begun. 50 years had passed since the time of the dragon's abduction. The dragons had grown to be massive, intelligent beings. During this time, Ki discovered he alone was a fire breather. Ki and his sisters bonded, for all they had in this alien land was each other. They spoke and comforted one another with their thoughts. Ragnar used his dragons and the Krieg to control the kingdoms within 300 leagues of his realm. The Krieg were a race of human men-like creatures with large horns protruding from their skulls. They feared Ragnar's magic and worshipped him as a god. The mere sight of a dragon struck fear into the hearts of the rulers of the land below. They paid tribute and granted the sorcerer Ragnar all of his demands. At this time, only the mystical realm of the sorcerer Gaul lay beyond his grasp. Ki detested his treatment. He was chained to his stable at night and struck by his Krieg handlers from iron infractions. One morning when a Krieg began to strike him, he turned, elongated his neck, and grabbed the handler with his massive maw. His jaw snapped shut, severing the Krieg in half. The remaining handlers fled in terror. Ki watched Ragnar remove his necklace of power and point his turquoise pendant towards him. A blue light emitted from the pendant and entered his body. A searing pain spread through his being. His blood started to boil. All six of his hearts swelled to twice their normal size. Ki collapsed onto the stone floor of his stable. His sisters watched in horror and shared his pain. If you want to read more, please do so. And when you get done, if you would like to leave a comment, I'm sure that Robert would love to hear it and would enjoy any feedback that you're willing to give him. Okay, we're coming near the end of the show because we're going to call it an early evening tonight. And what I want to do is I want to recap what's been going on this evening. And before I leave, one other thing that I really want to discuss. Let me share. Roberta Brocious on County Zero, Series Zero, Legacy, Renita's story from Tracy Krause. She said, "This is all going to come out as one big book someday, right?" that's pretty good. Yes, it will. Let's see. What do I want to talk about? The audiobooks. The last blog post that's going to pop up at 8:55 is about the audiobooks. Now, right now, there are 27 audiobooks for the Helping Hands Press author community, 23 of which are in the Helping Hands Press store. A few of them are on Audible right now. 23 of the audio samples right now are in one place, waiting for anyone who would like to listen to any of the audio samples. All that needs to be done is just fill out the contact form on the left side of the blog, and you'll be sent an email with instructions on how to get to the area so that you can download them and listen to any that you would like to. Let's see, June Foster has a comment on Robert Kennard's sample. Robert, you've evoked my sympathies for Key and his sisters. Good writing. It's very nice. That'll be published in the store in a brief moment. Let's see, Tony Helling. Intriguing, Robert. You drew me into the story. Let's see, another comment. Marcia Lee Laycock, she welcomes Larry to the Helping Hands Press author community. All those comments will be posted in a minute. Yes, and the other part was of the post is about the voice of Ada Stamen, Tony Helling's audiobook sample. So, yeah, if you'd like to listen to any or all of the audio samples, just fill out the contact form on the left side of the blog, and we'll send you the link to go and download them all. All right. But what I want to do now is, without further ado, let me get a synopsis of the evening here. Let's go backward here. We read the opening prayer. We talked about the blog post, What's Next for the Web Surfer series. That's right there on the blog. New release tonight, audiobook, Peggy Bland Pfeiffer's Sweetwater River. I read the blog post for Carol Horowitz, had to do with grammar. Talked a bit about Murray Pure's Silver City Volume 2, which will be out soon. Please meet Larry Peterson. Was a nice blog post. There'll be more from Larry coming soon about Larry and about his work. New release from Pamela Horner, Rats, Pumpkins, and Other Rumors, Volume 4. We talked about Mark Venturini's Volume 2 of Whispers from Forbidden Earth, Blood Tithe. We also discussed the new sale in the Helping Hands Press store, 25% off everything in the store, audiobooks, ebooks, paperbacks, anything that's on pre-sale. Just use the coupon code at checkout, Spring Super Sale, all one word, Spring Super Sale. We just talked about the new release from Tracy Krause from Colony Zero. I just read Robert Kennard's reading sample. And we just talked about the audiobooks. So, without further ado, we're going to let George Taylor take us home. I want to thank everybody for being a part of this evening on Facebook, Twitter, and any of the other social media that folks are on. Being nice enough to not just to listen to the G-Zone simulcast with the Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday party, but being a part of the party itself on any of the social media that's on. So here you go. Narration by George is George Taylor.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's Narration by George podcast, the podcast of audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. This week we are on podcast number 13. Now, we've dwelt on audiobooks in the past several weeks. That's our usual main focus. But this week, I want to share some thoughts with you of a spiritual nature. These are not my thoughts. I've lifted them to share with you with the permission of the writer. So let me introduce you to the writer. John Paul Cook is an amazing young man whom I've known since he was 5 years old. John Paul and his family and my family are very close, so I've got a little prejudice here. I've had a certain joy in watching John Paul and his four younger sisters grow up. I've even had the chance to teach JP in Bible classes for a short while. Now, he's in his early 20s now. He's graduated from David Lipscomb University with a ministry degree. He's currently doing master's work at the Princeton Theological Seminary in New Jersey. He's engaged and will be married in less than a month. Within that context, he posted a blog in a site called justmarriedministries.org. This site is a place for those who are engaged or newly married to write about their experiences. The blog is entitled, How Would Jesus Date? The following are his words. A Bible teacher who grew up in a broken home once told me how he learned about life through reading scriptures. Psalms was my mother, Proverbs was my father, and the Gospels showed me how to be a man. I found this image of being raised by Scripture to be thought-provoking. In Psalms, it is easy for me to find the kinds of prayers that my mother prayed with me. Proverbs contains the types of practical advice that many sons learn from their fathers. The third image, that of masculinity in the Gospels, is particularly intriguing for me. The Gospels are focused on telling the story of one man, Jesus. Most people seem to like Jesus and are interested in his teachings, but Jesus is far from our culture's depictions of actualized manhood. We are more likely to look at Bond, Bourne, or Bauer than to look at the boy born in Bethlehem for our images of masculinity. While most of our heroes in books and movies solve their problems with violence or competition, Jesus subverts these expectations. Christ teaches us that the last are first, that the poor are blessed, and that evil and violence can be resisted without retaliating in kind. Jesus is compelling, but also quite different from our expectations of what it means to be a leader or a successful person. From an early age, I had decided that I wanted to follow Jesus and desired to model my life after his life and teachings. I remember receiving a What Would Jesus Do bracelet and attempting to reevaluate situations in light of Christ's teachings. Jesus was an excellent teacher, but I realized that there was one area of my life that he had not said anything about. Jesus never said anything about having a healthy marriage, dating, or even how to talk to girls. As a teenager, this presented a problem. I wanted to talk to girls, to date in a faithful way, and eventually to have a healthy marriage that honored God. And unfortunately, my rabbi never went on any dates, not really a first century Jewish thing, I guess, got married, or even had a dating and relationships class with his disciples. Jesus did say that once you are married that you should not get divorced, Matthew 5:32, Matthew 19:9, Mark 10:5-12, and Luke 16:18. But that's about it. So what is a young Christian to do? I suppose I could have elected for a life of celibacy, but that was never an idea that has entertained for very long. Thus, my journey began to scour through Scripture in search of a teaching or example that might inform my own practice. Eventually, my adventure brought me to Ephesians 5:25-33. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Paul points us back to Jesus to understand how a healthy marriage works. Our example of how to love our spouse is found in Christ's beautiful love for the church. Obviously, wives are called to love their husbands in a Christ-like manner as well. However, this passage was particularly influential on me as I discerned how, as a man, to faithfully pursue and care for a woman. As I prepared to be married to my fiancée, Lauren, I'm trying to love her in this way. I am called to give myself up for Lauren, verse 25, to put her well-being and desires before my own. As her husband, I am called to make her holy, verse 26. Christ has also done this for Lauren in a way that I struggle to fathom, but my part is to do all I can to help her grow in faith into the holy woman of God that she was created to be. I am to love Lauren as I love my own body, verses 28 and 29, to care for her and make her joy and pain my own. In marriage, I will promise to love her as I love myself, verse 33. I believe I can take the analogy of Christ's love for the church and flesh out the details of how to faithfully love my wife by examining how Jesus loved others in his ministry. I could spend hours describing Christ's love and what it means for me, but I want to focus on a couple of things that have impacted my relationship with Lauren. Christ loved the church before the church even knew how to love him back. Christ makes himself vulnerable before the disciples or crowds even understand who he is. Christ remains faithful even when his church is unfaithful, 2 Timothy 2:13. I decided I wanted to take the initiative, to be the first person to make myself vulnerable in our relationship. When we are married, I will promise to love Lauren and to remain faithful to her, regardless of whether or not I perceive her to be acting lovingly and faithfully toward me. Our culture teaches us that it is normal to love others based upon certain conditions. Jeff Moore calls these conditions the I love you ifs. I will love you if you love me back. I love you because you make me feel good about myself or give me things I want. It has become second nature that we expect something in return for our love. Jesus did have something to say about this. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? Matthew 5:46. In my marriage, I will promise to love Lauren unconditionally in the way that Christ loves. I love you. No ifs or buts about it. No conditions. Just a choice to promise myself to another. Whew, that's much easier said than done. Contrary to my initial diagnosis, Jesus has indeed given me an excellent and challenging example of how to pursue a healthy and faithful marriage. So once again, I find myself chasing after my rabbi with a cheesy bracelet and a new understanding of how to live faithfully. Words from an amazingly mature and perceptive young man. God bless you, John Paul and Lauren, as you start your adventure in marriage with God at the center of the two of you. I share these with you, my audience, whether you are single or married, since there are principles that are applicable to any relationship, but especially to that relationship you have with a significant other. That's our time for today. Thanks for joining me for the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Don't forget to check out my audiobooks with Christian themes at my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com. Click on the books icon in the menu. So join me next week for an interview with author Sue Badeau. That's next Wednesday when the Narration by George podcast is once again new.